This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 47. Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is. It's a show focused on everything to do with fantasy books. Whether we're talking about urban fantasy, grimdark fantasy, epic fantasy, you name it, swords and sorcery, we've got it here on the show with the best and brightest authors from all the various fantasy book worlds. Plus, we will always have a few special guests we bring in along the way to talk about things to do with fantasy books. I mean, we've had fantasy book narrators on the show, and we'll have some more things coming up soon. For my update, I'd like to just kind of focus in like a laser on what I've been working on, and that is getting ready for the release of The Charm Runner, book one of the Broken Throne series. That releases this coming Friday. You know, as an indie author, all of the business aspects of publishing falls right on my shoulders. I have to do a little bit of everything, which I don't mind doing, but it is a lot of work. So I've been kind of getting squared away on putting the marketing side in place for a pending launch, making sure everything is perfect so that people get what they expect and enjoy what they get. As always, if you want to find out what I'm doing and what's coming up next, you can always check out what I'm doing online. You can join my Facebook fan group, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, or my Facebook page at Jamie Davis Books, and over at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com. I love hearing from you, whether you reach out to me there or by email or however. Just reach out. I'd love to check in and hear what you're up to and what you're reading, whether it's somebody else's book or mine. I always look for new authors to check out. All right, time to get into this week's episode. We have Lee Conley on the show today, and it was a lot of fun. Lee is a musician and writer in Lincolnshire in the UK. He lives with his wife, Laura, and two daughters, Luna and newborn Anya, who, when we recorded this episode, his wife was expecting any day. Anya was just recently born, and so it's exciting to welcome her into the world. I'm sure he and his family are getting adjusted to having a newborn in the house again. But alongside his lifetime of doing playing guitar and immersing himself in the study of music and history, Lee is also a practitioner and instructor of historic martial arts and swordsmanship. And believe me, we get into that in this episode. It's kind of fun to have somebody that actually knows what goes on with swordsmanship on the show. After writing a successful advanced guitar theory textbook, which is called The Guitar Teacher's Grimoire, Lee actually turned to take his love of historical martial arts and swordsmanship and kind of get into writing fiction and fantasy. So he's been working on his debut fantasy series, The Dead Sagas, as well as also generally writing other speculative fiction and even some horror. His interview segment is coming up next. You don't want to miss it. I had a great time chatting with Lee. Hi, Lee. I want to welcome you to the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. It's great to have you on the show.
Hi there. Nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you, too. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Tell the audience a little bit about yourself and what got you into writing.
Well, I live in the UK. I'm in a place called Lincoln, nice historic city. I work as a guitar teacher in the daytime, teaching music in all schools and things like that. I started writing a few years ago. I started writing a guitar book to start off with. And while I was finishing that off, I started writing fiction. And one thing led to another, and I've written a book or two. So,
well, that's awesome. And actually, it's interesting because you started off writing a nonfiction piece before, which is what I did. I actually, I'm a nurse and a paramedic. So my first book was actually a nonfiction book about how to set up the math equations to do proper drug dosing. So real boring stuff, but needed nonetheless.
Definitely.
So you wrote a book called The Guitar Teacher's Grimoire, which actually sounds fascinating. And as an electric bass player, I'm kind of curious about what's in there. So I might have to check that out.
Yeah, it's an advanced theory textbook. I teach a lot of guitar teachers and a lot of postgraduates. So I needed something like quite high level on the theory. It just I compiled it over about 7 years worth of teaching notes, and it's just full of all the scales, well, nearly all the scales ever. all the chords you'd ever need. It works for all the different guitar syllabuses, so it's just jam-packed full of scales, chords, and all sorts of interesting things.
Oh, that's awesome. I learned bass from a guy who played jazz, and so he made me learn to play lots of songs in many keys. And that stood me in good stead years later. I was not sure why we were doing it at the time, but I can play a lot of things in a lot of different keys. It doesn't take me much to switch to transpose in my head. So that's kind of nice.
That's the way to do it. Definitely. So he's a good lad.
So let's talk about what got you started into fiction. You wrote a fantasy book. So is fantasy something you've always read, or is this just a story that popped into your head?
I've always read fantasy. I've been a big, big fan of fantasy since I was, tiny. I mean, one of the first books I ever read was The Hobbit, and then probably Lord of the Rings, a lot of David Eddings. I read his entire catalogue before I was 10. I absolutely love fantasy.
Yeah, David Eddings is some good stuff. In fact, I still go back and read those books from time to time. I actually have them on audiobook now, so they make good listens. And there are parts of those books that still crack me up to this day.
I'd have to ask you though, what's your favorite series that he's done?
The second, it's not the Belgariad. That's the first one.
That's right.
The second one, the Malorian. There's a scene in there where Garion goes over and has to, which is it? He faces off against the knights and the peasants that are getting ready to face each other in battle across the plain. And he calls in this lightning strike and all this stuff. Over the top scene, which just cracks me up. Good. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, to be honest, my favorite one's actually the Tumuli. And the other one, he did ones about the knight, the Sparhawk.
Oh, I love those too. The Ruby Knight.
That's right. Yeah. I absolutely love them. I mean, quite controversial. Whenever I say they're my favorite out of all his stuff, everyone's like, no way, the Belgariad. But I really love those ones. They're great.
Yeah. I think the Belgariad just speaks to me because it's one of the earlier books I read when I was younger. And so I just, it holds a fond place in my heart, but I completely understand why you feel that way about the Tumuli, because it's an engaging story, and it's a much more complex character. Sparhawk is than any of the characters really in his other books.
Oh, absolutely. I think he's great.
Did you read the, Polgara, biography, I guess it would be considered.
Yeah, I did. There was Belgareth the Sorcerer, wasn't there? And there was Polgara the Sorceress. Yeah, I read them. I love those. They're great.
Yeah, I thought, of those two, I liked hers the best. I thought she's, one of my favorite characters. And there's just so much depth to what makes her tick.
Definitely. I think I'd have to agree with you there, actually. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about the characters in your book, because, it sounds like you really identify with the characters in these books, that they speak to you and reach out to you. Is that how you came about kind of driving this novel and the series that comes from it?
Well, it is. I kind of started to write it in a bit of a strange way. I just started writing down different scenes, and I had an overall arc in my head of where I wanted it to go. But there's elements of myself in some of the characters, definitely. I mean, I'll talk about a bit more about my swordsmanship in a bit, but there's a slight cocky side to me that a lot of my friends would definitely agree with, and that's definitely present in Bjorn. I think there's a lot of honor in something that I wouldn't say I was overly honorable. I've never really had the chance to prove it, but it's a world based very much on honor. And there's some fun characters there.
Oh, I agree. I just started reading it. So I just picked it up this morning, as a matter of fact, and spent an hour or so getting through the first part of it. A Ritual of Bone is book one. It just came out, back in June, right?
Yeah, 17th of June. So about two weeks today, I think.
Actually. Awesome. Well, congratulations on the first book out. That's
Thank
awesome.
You.
And how many books are planned for the Dead Sagas series?
Well, I've got three nearly all planned out, two written, a third one very much plotted out. The fourth one, I think there might be a fourth one. It depends how big. I mean, if book three ends up being really quite big, I may have to write a fourth one. And then I've got a few plans for some standalones as well. But three or four books, hopefully.
No, it's great. And I'm already engaged in the story and trying to, see where things are going. because clearly there's something wrong in this northern territory where all the stuff's happening. So it's really kind of gathered me. Do you want to give us a brief synopsis of what the story's about?
Well, basically, we've got several different storylines. It opens up with the apprentice who's conducting studies on the moon, and he's part of an expedition from an establishment called the College, which are scholarly sort of academics in a sort of a dark age sort of style. And sort of based them almost on the Christian monks of England in the sort of 8th, 9th century a little bit. Anyway, they've gone off this remote location to study some of the more sort of dodgy sort of aspects of academia. So they're looking at they're looking at how to prolong life through rituals rather than through medicine. And they stumble onto this ritual, and one thing leads to another, and and there's other characters as well. We've got a character called Bjorn, who's a huntsman, already famed huntsman in the realm, and he's been sent out to hunt down a beast that's plaguing on the other side of the mountains. It's a separate area, but he's been sent out to track down this so-called beast, and he gets he finds what he's looking for, but it's not quite what he expects. I'm not sure how far you've got. There's a number of other arcs as well.
Bjorn just kind of sort of escaped from getting captured that first time. So I haven't gotten that far, but it seems like there's a couple of different character arcs that are in there. Was that hard for you to follow and keep track of who was going where, or had you really plotted it out a lot ahead of time?
Well, at the time, I just sort of wrote it. I didn't really plot it out till more recently. Things have got a bit more complex in the later part of the story, and I've had to start weaving the arcs together. So I've done a bit of plotting on that side. But at first, I just had an idea in my head about what the different characters were going to do, and I just sort of wrote them out. The first book actually is probably the main character in the first book you probably haven't even met yet. His name's Arnulf. I introduced you to a few pivotal characters early on. But then the main bulk of the story really is about Arnulf in the first book, and it returns to the characters you've already come across in later books.
Well, I can't wait to read on and find out more about him too. So that's pretty cool. it just seems like it's a character driven storyline. Because I got a sense of Bjorn very quickly in the way you wrote him. You got a sense that he was driven by purpose and honor. He appreciated that he was famous, but he didn't seem to be gloating about it. It was just a matter of fact thing to him.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of honorable characters in the series, to be honest. I tried to do it so the setting will quickly get quite dark. The entire environment, the entire realm of Arnar gets quite dark quite quickly. And I tried to show the characters their nobility that shines through in the dark setting. So some of the characters that you really like at first end up not being quite what you hoped in the sense of their character. But they're certainly interesting and quite fun. But other characters really step up and their honor really shines through. So it's quite a fun progression.
You know, it's interesting. And as a person who used to be a first responder and dealt with people in their worst situations, in the emergencies of their life, I often was surprised at the ones who I would not have guessed were the ones who stepped up to do something extraordinary in a moment of desperation, and others who I might have expected to stand up and do that. Kind of shrunk back from that role. And that always was one of those surprising things to me.
Yeah, it's that fight or flight sort of reaction. Something it's a commentary on humanity that I wanted to try and put in there. I mean, most of it's just action and good storyline and gritty horror. But I did try and have a little bit of a sort of social commentary going on. But, don't want to get too deep on people.
I think there needs to be that ring of truth in the characters, or, people won't believe it. They won't buy into the premise of the book. I mean, especially in fantasy, because you have extraordinary things happening in your stories, you have to have characters that do things that people will go, oh yeah, okay, I could see doing that. Because otherwise they can't buy into the fantastical if there's nothing to anchor them in reality.
Absolutely. Most definitely.
So you mentioned swordsmanship earlier, and I know that's something you're involved with. Tell us a little bit about that.
I can't believe I mentioned that so early on. I actually practice historical martial arts. Primarily, I practice longsword, 15th, 14th century longsword. I've become an instructor as well quite recently. And we say we teach a lot of different historical martial arts at our club. We teach sort of saber and sword and buckler. I'm not a specialist in staff, but we do staff as well. Tomahawk and knife and all sorts of different styles. But primarily, we do longsword, and we try and encourage our top guys to come off to the tournaments, and we compete and see if we can win some tournaments and things like that. But it's a real passion of mine. It keeps me really fit as well. So it's a good hobby to have.
And you know, it's one of those things that I found early on YouTube, lots of videos of contests in historical martial arts tournaments. And they were great fodder for me to kind of work out what would work and not work in certain situations when I was writing stories with sword play and things like that. My extent of sword play goes to my LARPing experience, which had, you know, foam swords, nothing like the real thing, but at least enough to know that you can't really do anything like you see in the movies because it just won't work.
No, most definitely. I mean, the movies can be quite misleading, but that's more of a stage combat. That's all about looking good, which is obviously what you need for a camera. I mean, you mentioned the LARP. My head instructor was actually big into a head instructor. My personal instructor. We've got another instructor above us both, but he actually does a lot of LARP. He learned an awful lot about his combat technique from LARP, believe it or not. And obviously, then since he's got into HEMA, he's then refined it and learned the actual techniques properly. But it certainly gives you a really good perspective on the fight scenes when you're writing.
Oh, it absolutely did. And I mean, we would have these pitched battles in like fields with maybe 30, 40 people on a side. And you'd quickly see how, you know, once the combat became involved, how just order and any kind of discipline would fall apart quickly in an unorganized unit. And you could quickly get, you know, completely surrounded, but no one was paying attention to anybody but what was right in front of them.
Absolutely. And you can see how historically the chaos of battle would ensue. Commanders would quickly lose control of their forces. And you can see how it happened, can't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny how these things, you know, kind of come back and work into the thing. So I have a question for you because you're not the first person I've had on to talk about this, but you're the first person that I've thought of to ask this question.
Okay.
What's the thing you read about in a fantasy story dealing with swordplay that drives you the most nuts?
I can think of a few, to be honest. The same one you see on television. A couple of things, right. So swords sheathed on people's backs. If you have a really short sword, you can sheath a sword on your back, that's fine. But when you have a big long sword on the back, you try drawing that out of the scabbard. Unless your arm is longer than the sword, it's just not going to happen. What else? Dual wielding as well. We've seen this from the computer game, the world. Everyone loves dual wielding on like Skyrim and things like that. And the amount of kids I get come down to the club and they're like, oh, I want to learn to use two swords. And I'm just like, you don't, there's no real historical context for it at all. I mean, you get things like rapier and dagger, a parrying dagger, but there's no two broad swords. There's no two long swords. So that always drives me a bit nuts. One last thing as well. There's a few, but when people see the channel on the sword blade, I've heard a lot of times people say it's a channel for blood. It's what the blood runs down.
But it's for lightness, right?
Exactly.
It's to keep the blade a little bit lighter. And anyone who's carried even a foam sword for any length of time, it is wearying. And having an actual sword that has some heft to it and made of metal is even heavier. You need some serious grip strength and wrist strength to maintain any kind of level of stamina with those things.
Yeah, I mean, we'll fight, say, I mean, a dozen 5-minute bouts. And by the end, it takes maybe half an hour. And by the end of it, you are very, very tired. You know, we wear this big, thick leather. It's not reenactment armor. It's modern materials and reinforced for safety. And the way we do it is if we were actually sparring in, say, medieval armor, I'd probably end up slipping my sword through someone's visor or something like that, because we aim for the eyes, we aim for the throat, we aim to kill, basically. So without this modern reinforced equipment, we'd probably hurt ourselves. So there's definitely quite fun, but it is very much tiring, absolutely.
And so it amazes me to read about battles and realize how exhausted after even a brief fight everyone must be. And I've seen a couple of movies that have represented that well, where you see like the battle becomes just this slog in the mud, and they're just literally crawling across the ground at each other.
Yeah, I mean, I've often wondered how do they do it? I mean, you hear about battles lasting for hours and hours at a time. You know, sometimes they last, you know, most of the day. How are those guys doing that? They must have had some incredible physical conditioning, you know, constant training to be able to have that kind of stamina. I mean, I don't think I could fight for 3 or 4 hours without stopping. I'd be killed quite quickly, I think. But sure I'd take a few out with me first. But
and that's what makes the hero in the story, right? I mean, is because they've, you know, ostensibly they've done that training, or they've got that physical conditioning from some other hard physical labor that enables them to pick up the combat end of things more quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you imagine that people back, yeah, historically 500 years ago, they were probably a lot more physically active than we are today. I mean, we have a life of luxury in comparison. So perhaps we've become a bit soft in our civilized ways.
Well, just to light the cook stove required hours of effort and labor with an axe to bring in enough wood to cook a meal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we take for granted that we just flip on a switch these days and we have light, we have heat, we have, you know, absolutely everything. We buy our food from convenience stores and everything. It's, you know, it's a different life, isn't it?
You know, there was a short-lived reality TV show here in the United States that set couples in these homesteads in the West, in remote areas, and said, all right, we've built a cabin for you. We've done that part. But you have to, over the course of a summer, produce enough food and material to get you through the winter. And at the end of the summer, we'll judge everybody based upon how you do. Would you survive the winter or not? And one of the things that struck me was that At the end of the time, they'd grown some food, they'd grown some wheat, and they'd grown some other vegetables and things like that. But the thing that killed all of them was that they should have been spending up to 5 hours a day cutting firewood for the winter, which just astounded me.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to have a go at something like that. I mean, I don't know how well I'd do. I'd like to think I'd do well. I think they all do when they go on that show, don't they? But I'd love to have a go at something like that. That sounds great.
Yeah, I mean, the expert that came in at the end to like judge them, one guy had done better than the others, and he'd only gotten enough to get him like through January. And basically, again, then your family would freeze to death, was basically what they told him. Just astounding when you think about that. How people just aren't aware of how much time and effort, and then that's where that physical conditioning must come from, because it's not easy. I split wood for our fireplace, and you know, it's a half hour job to split wood for, you know, what we're gonna burn in a weekend for decorative purposes. And I can't imagine having to do that 5 hours a day, day in, day out, all summer long, just to make sure I can survive.
Yeah, definitely.
So you've got book two written in the Dead Sagas book. What's the title of that going to be?
Well, it's nearly written. I'm just writing the last 20,000-30,000 words for it, but it's standing at just about 100K at the moment. But yeah, it's called A Ritual of Flesh. So we have A Ritual of Bone and then A Ritual of Flesh.
So I'm getting a sense that there's like an undead vibe going on here, like the dead comeback. Is that something that we're going to likely see?
You could possibly say that.
Well, I'm looking at A Ritual of Bone. The very first line in the description says, only valor and steel can stand against the rising dead. So I guess that answers my question for me.
I think I gave it away on that little quote, didn't I?
No, that's great.
But I know.
Go ahead.
I mean, yes, certainly there's certainly an undead element in there. Accidental undead elements, but I've tried to take a new spin. So I tried to take existing tropes from the zombie genre and the horror genre and put a bit of a new spin on them. So I've tried to acknowledge the classics of zombie, and I've tried to work in the newer, faster running zombies and a bit of twist on it as well. And it's all a bit of a, well, there's hopefully some quite terrifying creatures in there. So
Well, that, you know, then that's what we, you know, that's the big trick, isn't it? Is to take existing tropes, put enough of them in there that people feel comfortable, because the reader, I think, needs to feel comfortable enough in the genre that they can recognize it for what it is. But it's the twists on some of those tropes that make the series and the books enjoyable.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole point when I first set out writing it, I had an idea on what I was going to do. I wanted to blend sort of the horror market and the zombie genre with sort of a story, character-driven, epic, dark fantasy story. And that's basically what I'm trying to do with the Dead Sagas. But I'm really enjoying I write it for myself, to be honest. I write it because I love, you know, what I think the story should go like. I think it's as far as I'm concerned, I'm quite enjoying writing it. So it's a good story.
You know, it's funny that there's a lot of things out there when you're talking about marketing your books and things like that, that, you know, envision your perfect ideal reader. But that's different than what I call reader number one. And reader number one is you. And if you don't like the book, if it's not written for your taste, then that's, I think, really going to come through in what other people read.
I think that's absolutely. If you're not enjoying, I mean, I'm trying to write a book, or with all the stuff I write, I'm trying to write stuff that I would want to read. I think someone's not written that yet. I want to try and write something that, because I want to read that book, so I'm going to write it. And that's basically the sort of ethos I have when I'm trying to do it.
And I think that you can do that and still meet reader expectations in a positive way, but still, you know, write the things that make you happy and you know, make you feel like you've accomplished something and that the story speaks to you in some way, shape, or form, whether it's through a character's journey or through the resolution of a central conflict. You know, those are the things that drive us as authors, I think, to keep writing. And, you know, when we find that new story to write, it's because there's something in there that's just telling us we need to solve a problem or we need to write this character's journey.
No, I'd agree, definitely. I mean, there's certainly elements from, you know, stories that have happened to myself and my friends and things like that I've tried to sort of work in without giving too much detail, try to work in different issues that people have got and, you know, how people react to courage, as I said already, and how they react in certain situations. So it's certainly something I've been thinking about.
So when you thought about the Dead Sagas book, was it just an idea of I want to kind of meld this? Was it the initial idea of I'd like to have like a zombie book set in an epic fantasy setting? Or was there something else that kind of came to you first?
Well, that was the initial spark. You know, I was watching things like The Walking Dead, and I watch a lot of sort of the Romero zombie film. Me and my wife are big zombie film fans, and we're also a big fantasy fan. I mean, I love fantasy, so I just thought, there's zombies in Game of Thrones, for example, and there's plenty of, you know, fantasy stories that feature zombies, but I hadn't really read a full-on zombie apocalypse, you know, slash fantasy. Yeah, really. I mean, I found there's actually a few. There's a few of us lurking, but that's why I first set out. So initially, I thought I'm gonna write something that's a zombie fantasy and see where it goes. And then the characters and the storyline all just came out as I wrote the initial chapters. And then I started thinking, I could put that character in this situation later on, or this character needs to end up in this position. How is he gonna get there? Some of them say some of it's plotted and some of it's just written, you know, off the cuff. And I just see what happens. But it's a fun journey.
Definitely. And I love the concept of a zombie apocalypse in an epic fantasy swords and sorcery kind of setting, because it has not been done. Or if it has, it's been done only a few times. Because when you think of zombie apocalypse, you think, you know, after our time, the apocalypse hasn't happened to us yet. But, you know, in this setting, I think it would be fascinating, because the things that help people survive in zombie apocalypse stories in our time, like The Walking Dead and stuff like that, if they didn't have firearms, you know, they, you know, a lot of those characters would never have survived to the point that they've reached, you know, in season whatever 8 or 9 it is right now, in Walking Dead or something like that. So to imagine how you do with just a blade or an axe or a tomahawk or whatever it is you're armed with, would be daunting. How could you hack your way through them?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I found when I was writing it, I realized quite quickly that, I mean, some of the people, some of the characters in my book are warriors. They're actually, you know, trained killers. So they have a good crack at dispatching a few of the undead. Some of the more civilian type characters, they suffer a little bit more. And there's certainly an element of the training side of things. But I realized quite early on that a lot in a medieval dark age European setting. Obviously, it's set in a fantasy universe, but there's a lot of people who are quite well armed and are quite used to fighting. So I just thought, well, I have to really step up how hard these zombies and these well, it's not just zombies, but these creatures are, how hard they are to kill. So because you know, if you've got a band of warriors that are, you know, fight quite regularly in different wars and things, I just thought, well, they're not going to have too much of a trouble just bashing them in the head. So I've tried to put a nice spin on them, and maybe that doesn't work anymore. And there's a whole different kind of creature that's in there, which you'll read about soon, hopefully, which I hope you'll enjoy. And but yeah, I've tried to make it as difficult as possible for trained warriors to fight them.
Well, I can't wait to keep reading. A Ritual of Bone is the book one that I'm digging into right now, and I'm looking forward to getting into that farther. When are you scheduled to get book two out? Have you kind of thought about when you'd like to have that released?
Well, the original aim was to have it done by October, so around Halloween time.
Perfect.
I don't think I'm going to hit that deadline, though. I've still got a little bit left to write. Me and my wife are about to have another baby as well, so I'm sure that's going to slow things down very slightly.
Babies have a way of doing that, don't they?
they do, but they're necessary.
They are.
I was hoping to get it finished off in the next couple of months, and then it's going to go off for editing and beta reading. So hopefully, maybe by early next year or the end of this year, hopefully.
Awesome. Well, that's exciting. Yeah, I know. It's funny. We just got word about a month ago that my son and his wife are going to have a baby. So our first grandchild's coming along, and it's kind of exciting. But I had to look at my writing year because baby's due at the end of November. And I'm like, well, I have stuff that I had planned to do and release and write. And, you know, I kind of planned that out all ahead of time and set some goals and stuff. And I had to rework some of those things because I just knew there was no way. They live reasonably close, so it's not like we have to go traveling. But I also know how I and my wife are going to be. And we're just not going to, I'm not going to want to focus on anything else for a couple of weeks at least.
No, I imagine. Well, congratulations on that one.
Well, thank you.
I'm sure you'll be able to rework a few things, and you know, it might take a step back, but you know, I'm sure you'll have the passion to just, you know, maybe take a few things off the schedule and get some writing done.
Well, yeah, that's the plan.
Congratulations.
Oh yeah, thank you. That's part of the things we deal with as writers is the fact that we can have a plan to write a certain number of words a day. We can have a plan to get the story done in X amount of time, but it doesn't mean that we're going to actually accomplish that all the time. And it's I think giving yourself the flexibility to rework your goals and rework the expectations you have for yourself are as important as setting the goals to begin with. And so that's something I've picked up over the last, I guess, 5-6 years that I've been writing.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, people are... I think they're often quite hard on themselves to meet these goals, but everyone's got to remember these goals are self-imposed. So it's, you know, if I want to take an extra month to write my book, then and so be it. You know, it's just sometimes life gets in the way.
Well, definitely. And I think that's where people like they set their goals and they say, well, I have to stick to the plan no matter what. And I'm like, well, when you set the plan in motion, you didn't know about this happening. So you have this health problem or you have a family emergency or whatever the case may be that sets you back a week or a month or whatever. That's the point where you go, okay, I didn't know about that. So now I have to revise the plan to put that into the plan. And because of that, everything gets shifted and that's okay. And I think it's just giving yourself permission to do that.
Absolutely. I think that's a good bit of advice to tell people as well, because I hear a lot of people really being really hard on themselves about they've missed deadlines, things like that. But, you know, they are self-imposed deadlines. As long as you've got, you know, a goal and as long as you've got a plan, I mean, that's the main thing, isn't it?
Definitely. You know, Lee, we're getting towards the end of our discussion here, and I'd love to chat with you some more. I'd like to invite you to come back when the next book comes out, and maybe we can talk a little bit about book two as I get a chance to finish up book one and get ready for book two. But would you please come back on the show?
That would be an absolute pleasure. Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, Lee. Is there any place folks can find you? Where would you like the readers to reach out to you?
Well, I'm always on Facebook, Twitter as well. You can always say hi on my Goodreads page as well. I think there's a mailing list on all three of them. I love it when people get in touch. So, you know, if anyone's listening that wants to, definitely do. So I'm always always looking for new people to talk to.
Well, great, Lee. Well, thanks for coming on the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. And we will make sure we have links to your Facebook and your Goodreads and your books, of course, your book, of course, and what's to come, we'll look forward to.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us online for a whole lot more from the Fantasy Focus community, both on Facebook and over at the fantasy-focus.com site. If you're over there on either place, whether the Fantasy Focus group in the Facebook or in the blog site, leave a comment where this episode is posted. Let me know what's on your mind or ask a question of our authors. We'll go ahead and make sure they get the message and they can answer you back promptly. Also on the website, on each podcast episode post, don't forget to subscribe to the show. There are links right there below the player at the top of the page. You can subscribe all sorts of ways, no matter what your device is, even by email. So make sure you do that so you don't miss any of the upcoming shows, because we've got some pretty awesome guests scheduled coming up, including a great interview with a good friend of mine, Sarah Nofke, in the next episode. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis. I'm the author of what I like to call Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook if you get a chance. I'm available at Jamie Davis Books or on my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where if you want, you can get a free book to check out and see if you like what I write just by signing up for my newsletter while you're there. Whatever you do, though, subscribe to this show. Come back and join us here for the next podcast. And as always, in the meantime, folks, keep your eyes open, because there's magic all around you.